Life is sweet. Let it sweep you off your feet.
Hi, you're listening to Find Your Joy. If you're looking for ways to thrive rather than survive in a world that can seem rather chaotic, you're in the right place. We will be sharing stories of our own as well as those from guests who have found ways to bring hope, healing, and freedom into places where trauma has impacted them. I'm Allie, author of The Art of Healing Trauma, and I'm here to remind you that life is sweet. Now, let's dive in and find ways to create our joy. Hi, this is Allie, and this week we are back with the incredibly interesting, wonderful storyteller, layer upon layer of things that will pull us in and make us, Tom, you're just a guy that people want to know more about. Welcome back, Tom Locke.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be here, Allie.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the things you did. So, I mean, you're an author, you're a mathematician, and then you came from Toronto to Vancouver and dropped yourself into the middle of the film industry.
Yeah.
How did that work for the mathematician?
Well, how I got there is probably, the thing. And this is the great twists and turns in life and taking advantages of opportunities. Life's all about choices. I think we all can agree with that. And a little bit of luck, again, never hurt anybody, right? And like the Boy Scout, be prepared. So fortunately,
right.
I was in a lot of ways. Well, what happened was during my tenure and after I finished my math degree in mathematics, I flipped over to the MBA program at York University as well and did my MBA at the same time while I was articling for Deloitte Haskins and Sells in the accountancy business. Now, I had no desire to be a CPA, at the time, but I was smart enough to realize that the exposure to all these businesses by going out and doing audits and all these things was incredible. So I did things from stock markets to grain feeding places. But I ended up in one location with a company called Ampex. That's spelled A-M-P-E-X.
Yes.
Now, Ampex were the producers of very high-end professional audio and video equipment that would be used in audio studios for music, on TV, for TV, for your, videotape replays and all that stuff. All that stuff was Ampex stuff. For the Olympics and that, all the big machines that were used there to record, the Olympics, send them back, that company was Ampex. Ampex also had the tape. So they had the razor blades, if you will, for that audio and video. And they had small cassettes too. People may remember the Ampex cassettes.
Yeah, I remember the name. Yeah.
The video and stuff. They were headquartered in Redwood City, California, near San Francisco. And so they were one of our clients. Well, as usually happens, they went in to a situation saying, hey, we're replacing our financial area in this company in Canada, in Apex Canada. Would you consider it? So it was my choice. So I left Deloitte's and joined Apex Canada there. And with my music background, and that was great because Ampex also had a music division, which was winding down, at that time. So help wind that down and working with the people. But my deal was, I said, and they're surprised by this. I said, I'll come in and work with you guys. I want to continue finishing off my MBA. But I want to take it back that time. I want the personnel department under my thing. Of course, all the other managers are good, George. We don't want to, gee whiz. But I found out early in life, I guess from my days of playing team sports for years, that if you could put the team together, if you had the team together, it's amazing what you can accomplish. One person's not going to do it. So I took over that whole part and, started working on bringing the people with the various departments together as a team. That was one of my outside goals, and also cleaning up all the small things from a mathematical side or anything, analytics side, Deloitte side of things that were wrong or needed attention in the company. It was then actually I discovered, just to digress a bit, that I was left-brained and right-brained. I was analytical, but I had this creative side of me. So I started working with the sales department and created an area of financial marketing where I would go up with the sales team selling this to the various studios and that. And then I would sit down with their finance people and creatively figure out how to finance this thing or how they should approach the banks moving forward. So this is where financial marketing came to be for me in that
Right.
company. So how do I get to the West Coast? So three of the guys in our company, top engineers, sales guys, and that decided to set up a post-production facility in Vancouver. What was happening over the period of time was producers and that were, in Canada, at least, were tired of waiting till after the 11 o'clock news to go into the TV stations to use their equipment to
Right.
edit and stuff. We need a post-production place. And they started to grow in Toronto. In fact, a lot of them were our clients. So in 1979, a group in Vancouver set up. Again, three of our old Apex guys set up there. And so for about 5 years, they sort of courted me, and we talked about it when they got, big enough to join them. Now, I had an opportunity to go to head office in Redwood City. In between, I worked in England and Australia for the company, helping with their management setups of the businesses. So I ended up in Vancouver with this company in 1984. And a funny story I tell. So I went from an office bigger than this room that I'm in now to a desk drawer. That was my that's all they could afford me in this guy's office. I had a drawer. That was it.
Oh my
It
gosh.
was fine with me because I wanted to get away from all the tiering stuff in business. Still, appreciation that organization is key in moving forward, and it ended up being our calling card. But we didn't need all this a level. You wanted immediacy, you wanted to contact, especially with clients coming in. So that's how I joined, got into the post-production, aspects of it. And back then, we weren't in film or TV at all. We're in high-end commercial and corporate work. That's where I met Hank, because he worked for Palmer Jarvis. And we did all the post-production for all Palmer Jarvis's video
Oh,
stuff.
well, and that is our mutual friend,
That's our
Hank
mutual friends, Hank Leonhardt.
Reinhardt,
Yeah, you
Big
saw that.
Hank.
Big Hank. So that's how, we met. So we, like, Peter Drucker says, a famous business guy, you got to sometimes take a courageous step as you move forward. So I got involved with Vancouver. Mike Harcourt was mayor of Vancouver. Vancouver and LA became sister cities. This is a concept that Eisenhower started in 56 to bring down the level of the Cold War challenges around the world. And so we had different cities in the States connecting with different cities around the world. For example, San Francisco is connected to Perth, Australia. They're sister cities. Vancouver and LA were natural. So we did, and then we helped form the LA Vancouver Sister City Society. And I ended up presiding over it a few years later. But in doing the course of that, I used that as another door so we could start, bringing ideas about, hey, when you're coming to Canada and Vancouver to shoot, don't just shoot and ship. Why don't you stay here and maybe post-produce? And our timing was great. The new network came on called the Fox Network in the States at the time. And Stephen Cannell had moved over to the Fox Network and said, hey, I'm going to shoot these two things in Canada. So we approached him and say, hey, and there was a couple of post-production facilities there. Why don't we finish them here? Why don't we post-produce them? We can do this. And so anyway, right place, right time, we delivered, and we were able to procure 21 Jump Street. And that was our first
Wow.
kick
And I
into
have
the
a fry. You know what? This is such a small world. It's so funny to me because I think of all the people. Like, I can remember going down to Canal Production. I remember going in downtown in Vancouver there. That little, it was kind of off the place. And my very, very good friend was married to a guy that was a grip, and his dad was so Pierre Hubert, and his dad was Jacques Hubert, and they were all, he was Jacques. You pro I'm guessing you probably knew Jacques because he did all the d directing, and he did what was it called, Beachcombers and
Oh,
First
I mean,
Blood, and
yeah,
he did.
everybody worked in the Beachcombers at some time.
Yeah, so many things, but I just remember that my girlfriend was on 21 Jump Street, and it's sort of funny. It's like when you're in Vancouver, I was never involved in all of that stuff, but so many people,
it was such a huge industry. It kind of blew up in the 80s and 90s, and just all of a sudden everybody was working there.
Yeah, it did. And then we managed to get together. I think one of the big things we did, getting back to my Ampex story, I remember putting the people together.
Yes.
I got involved in putting all the groups together, having the unions sitting at the table with us, all the services, the legal guys, the post-production guys, the accounting guys, the production guys, all sitting around table, because it takes them all to, to do the work. It's show business. The emphasis is on the word business. And so we created what we called then the Community Market Group. Today, it's known as the Motion Picture Production Industry Association of BC, and it's probably one of the strongest ones in the world. So it was just wonderful being at the right place at the right time, but with a lot of people that had the same desire. It wasn't about taking your piece of the pie. It was whatever you took out of that pie, make sure you chewed it well so there'd be another pie the next year around, because the money could move quite easily. So we're very sensitive to that.
And that's got to be coming back to that you're a mathematician, right? You're a numbers guy. So if the only way this thing is going to work and have sustainability is that we, if you get a bunch of artists around, we can get a little bit caught up in the creating. Mm-hmm. And it's really good to have a numbers guy who is creative as well, who can come and figure out how to give this thing longevity. I love that.
Well, budget was really important to go through to ask the necessary things to organize, to put down on paper in order to meet the creative desires. That's really what it's about. So they do work in tandem. When I taught a course at UBC called Creating Your Competitive Edge, we had it for the entertainment industry for about 9 years, and it won awards right across Canada. The whole program was fantastic, but it was about connecting the necessary evils that make up the business. It goes beyond just filming, being in front or being behind the camera, and bringing that together. But more importantly, getting back to one of the things you've mentioned before to me is I guess the way I can say is, how can you sell yourself if you don't know yourself? So what I would get involved with is, so you're going out and presenting the marketplace, let's say the concept, given that there's interest there, they wouldn't have met with you, but at the end of the day, they're not buying this, they're investing in you because they believe that you can deliver, because it is all about delivery. And you got to have that consciousness in yourself, the belief in yourself, and not arrogance, but just a good belief in yourself to share, what you really believe you can do and support it. So that's what we're working. And that is really, I see it in all the people I know. I mean, I'm much removed from the industry. I consultant and executive produce a bit now in a couple of passion projects that I'm on. But I see that in these new people, forward and what they've learned. I mean, we didn't know a lot of things. It was a good thing because it didn't stop us. We sort of learned a lot along the way. It was great.
Wow, this is, I feel like, how do I want to say? I hope for myself, as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, I feel like I'm getting I'm getting a free consultation here from. Because these are all true, and what you're saying, right? I mean, it's not about arrogance. It's true humility, right? When actual humility is understanding fully what I'm capable of, what I'm not, and thriving in those areas. I mean, that's what it's about. And so figuring that out, you were able to figure out how to help people reach that.
And you knew
the limitations and when to encourage them to fly and maybe when to not.
What it did, though, it forced them to create what I call a trusted team environment. So in this course, we exposed them to all the elements in the piece. And doesn't mean you're going to be good at it, but it means you recognize and respect it. Well, find somebody who's really good at it and have them join your team. No different than your accounting person that you talked about before, because she said, I can trust the numbers. That's fine. You need people that can trust the numbers. That's a good thing.
It's a very good. Well, it's true. And then understanding that they'll fit into your team. It's kind of like, you know, putting a band together. And, you know, I might not hire the best, whatever, fill in the blank drummer, whatever. I might not, but I would rather work with the person that's best for the team. Whether they're the most exceptional at the thing they do, but that they would be the best fit. And I think that's a little bit of what you're talking about.
It is. It is all about fit. Take two going different ways, far different, challenge than that. It's tough enough getting something done. You don't need an internal challenge at the same time.
Right? It's so true. It's like that. So you ended up, you worked on 21 Jump Street. You worked on X-Files?
Yeah, we did X-Files. We did Millennium as well. And they're, big, big international shows.
Yeah.
I think one story that I think people find fascinating is, how did you get 21 Jump Street to actually, produce, or have their film, done here? We had to process it. How did that happen? Well, really fascinating way. The big thing for Stephen J. Cannell was every morning he'd get up, get his donuts and coffee, go into the studio at 10:30 to watch the dailies from the day before, rushes as they called them, from the day before. He says, if you can have them there, you can process the film here in Canada, we'll work with you and we'll talk about, post-producing the show. So how are we going to do that? So what happened was every night with the film would come in, our film processors would come in the evening and they process the film. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, they'd be picked up and driven to the airport and beyond what was affectionately known as the fish flight from Vancouver to LA, picked up in LA, driven to Hollywood so Cannell could see them for breakfast. I remember the first, when we got the job, I remember getting up for a week in the morning, meeting our driver and driving to the airport and watching to get on a plane and going down there. And just to make so, we made sure that everything was going. And it developed a great relationship. Even after 21 Jump Street, we have sort of, Velcro on the door. Here's the next show, like Street Justice or some of the other shows came in. We had developed a great relationship because we delivered. And so our whole focus was we were as good as the last foot of film that went out the door. And that's right. How we had to look at everything.
Wow.
So it's and in this business, as a guy said to me in the States, because he ended up making great connections with other people there, help us out in the States. It's quite a community. He says, you'll survive in this business. You'll be as good as this business, as good as you can take the stuff that's thrown at you.
Yeah.
And that's so true. It's so true. I remember we're doing 21 Jump Street, our first year, and it's going great. We've got two shows in the can. Remember, this was back in when September was the opening, season for all the networks.
And, right. That's
all
right.
Getting up. So we got first two done. We're working on post-production in the next three, and it's moving along great. Some genius phones us from LA and says, okay, episodes 5 is going to be episode 1. So in 48 hours, we had to turn around and get episode 5 as 1 into the can.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? I love the smile on your face and the little twinkle in your eyes thinking about it, because what comes to me right now is, there's the story of the little kid and the parents walk in and there's a mound of manure and this little kid is sitting there and he has this shovel and they're like, "What are you looking so happy?" And he says, "With all this crap in there, there's just got to be a pony."
Right on. Right on. Yeah. And what a great story. My dad told me that story when I was 15 years old. I mean, you know, what you just told me.
Yes, and it's still, you
the
know, and
story
it's
about
still,
the optimist and pessimist.
yes, and it's still true, right? It's
It is.
the whole thing. Because in life, the whole, you know, it's funny. I'll say, I wrote my book during COVID too, right? So I have a where it's around here somewhere. I don't know if I'll find it. That's okay. But I'd started like you know what I mean? I'd had this beginning that it was going to start, but how I came up with the concept for Find Your Joy was this. I'd been a co-author. So I had my accident. Life was pretty, you know, unpleasant for about 3 years going through all that stuff.
Sure.
And I was trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? You know, I just wasn't, I was at that time, I was still in my 50s. I wasn't really prepared to just do nothing, which was sort of was the prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is I'm only so great at something but the wheels start to come off the bus at about an hour. I can't track anymore, but I have a great hour. And
good.
You know, and so I was a co-author in these three different books that were, you know, there's a theme and you talk about challenges and then how you overcome them. And that's great. They were great books. And I was happy to be, and I learned a lot in those. And then I was starting to do my own book and I was, you know, it was on trauma, right? It's a little hard to be happy and peppy writing about trauma. But the shift came for me when I said, I can't write one more thing about all these, you know, the sad story and then save a little bit at the end for the turnaround. If it can't be about finding joy, I just would rather not write it. I mean, now I'm going on to, I'm doing children's books, so that's fine. Everything, you know, that's a whole different thing. But I said to my publisher at the time, I can't do it. I don't want to. I don't want to write about that. So my book changed from, you know, being about forgiveness and things like that too. And it's called, what's it called? The Art of Healing Trauma, Finding Joy Through Creativity, Spirituality, and Forgiveness. Needed to shift it into that. So how did painting help me? How did music help us? How did other people's stories are in there? I talk a little bit about it. And that's how this was birthed, because then there was COVID was going on there was so much unhappiness and I get it, right? You know, there is a lot of unhappiness. And I believe in my heart with everything in me that if we can find the joy in whatever it is, I'm not, you know, cancer sucks and bankruptcy sucks and divorce sucks, but I guarantee there's going to be a moment of joy. And if you can just scramble for that, if you can just find that and go for it and don't let go, then that's the place. And when I'm listening to the things that you had to do, like, you had to get up and you had to be up late and then get up early and make sure, and actually visually I can see, I'm guessing you were a rather intent making sure that thing got on that plane, because it's easy, you know, it's like a shell game, right? Wow, where's the ball? Where's the ball? You know, to physically make sure that happened.
Yeah.
But you did it.
Yeah. We're, you know, again, fortunate, and a lot of good people there. And I think that's one of the big thing is the you is a huge group. It's, you know, goes right from the set, getting it to us. And we're sort of like the last link, you know, in post-production, processing that film, having people that have the ability to work in the dark in order to process stuff, getting it together, make sure that the guy's there to, you know, take it there. There's a lot of moving parts in this industry, even today. I mean, it's a little easier, and I say that in quotes a bit, because of the digital aspects of it. Now we can have production studios pretty much anywhere, because we're just shooting digital pieces, you know, over the net to various post-production facilities, for example, or audio facilities. So that's been a big breakthrough, and that's why more and more, you know, is being done today, and it's created more and more opportunity. Who would have known We're in a 3 to 4, you know, billion-dollar industry here in British Columbia. Like, it's phenomenal. And another thing a lot of people don't know about British Columbia, and it was another area that I got early days involvement in, is the area of animation. You know, there's more animators here in Vancouver than there is in LA.
Wow, that's
it's an animation
that's
capital.
Exciting because I'm going to turn my books into cartoons, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, well, and cartoons still sell because they're a form of escape.
I actually have two nieces. One is an animator for Disney, and she's in Vancouver.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just it's incredible. And what I love about it is that people, you know, you have the, like, who would have thought? I wouldn't have thought. Let me just say that. Let me clarify this. I might not have thought, walking down the hall of York University, at a young man that was sitting there, you know, working, taking tests and writing papers on mathematics.
Yeah.
I might not have thought, let's drop him into Vancouver and the film industry and let him be part of what actually birthed that whole incredible. That's the beauty of it. You just don't know.
You don't know. And sometimes what you, it's not about you don't know it won't hurt you, but you don't know may help you. So
yeah. Oh, boy, isn't that the truth? And staying curious and being open and all of those, because the curiosity in your mind to be a guy that went from a mathematician into.
Yeah, I know, to go from that, but it really wasn't that, you know, much of a stretch. And now, and then music had nothing to do with it. It was just always my escape piece. So I never thought, you know, much about it till I started writing. These are actually therapy pieces for me. I write one a week, takes me about an hour and checking out, but they're great. And I know I've got a great sense of accomplishment, and I'm waiting to see, you know, how people, you know, react to them when they come out. So I even post them freely on my Facebook page and that, and I'm happy to set you up on that, and you can
perfect.
You'll get an idea of how the stories work, and you'll be, I think, quite humbly, that you'll be fascinated by some of them, going, really, that's how, you know, that's how it happened. But yeah, truth is stranger than fiction. That it definitely comes out in the entertainment industry.
That is so true.
Yeah, and it's a tough business. Entertainment industry is a tough business, especially on the production side. On the post side, or the production services side, the necessary evils, as I often call it, of the business, there is always work. Now, I may not be with production company A, B, and C, but now I'm working with D, E, and F, or I'm working with GH. So there's always something coming in for us, as opposed to, hey, we've got nothing on our slate, or nothing's been greenlit by Telefilm. You know, what do we do now? You know, you keep pitching all the time. So the production side's pretty precarious to me. It is. And as an executive producer, I see it more so, because it's blending, you know, the right money, you know, with the right concept. And that's not that easy.
Oh. Okay. My little brain is working. You might just be my first call when my books are ready to do something.
I could. Well, it's funny, because I've flipped a lot of my, you know, how to market and present, you know, in the marketplace. 50%, you know, in writing a book is the actual writing, editing, and getting it down right. But the success comes from getting out there, or using your connections in the marketplace. You know, how can you go forward? How do you, you know, make it happen? There's a number of ways. Social media is great and all that stuff, but that's nothing beats one-to-one. One thing I didn't have during the COVID time was the opportunity to stand in front of 100, 150 people and talk about the magic of music and how it affected them, because it was something they could all relate to. And then having the back of the room open up for people who maybe want to pick up a copy of the book before they headed out. And I think those are still, you know, very powerful. The other thing is thinking about, what can you do with the book? You know, care facilities, adult community centers, and stuff like that are great places for presentation and going out and sharing, you know, fun time and a time of enjoyment, if you will, in the marketplace. Everybody wins. Like, I get a kick out of talking about it. So that's fine. So it's not even like working when you're doing stuff. you know, in that vein can help someone out. And it's really a lot of the things that we work on is a mindset. I was very curious, you know, listening and you talking about your book, you say, no, I can't write it that way. I got to flip this around to a positive way. So when my dad, for the 3 or 4 years that I dealt with Alzheimer's, and I changed, you know, going to see him every day from a chore to an event.
Yes.
And then I would, and really when he passed, I wrote a piece for caregivers, and I talked about, and because a lot of funny things, you know, do happen during those period of time. It's respectful. We do it. The thing's been around the world. It was kind of a neat thing that I did, and the Alzheimer's of BC published it for their caregivers. But the whole concept, what I'm getting to is turning some challenges, you know, into opportunities, but chores into events is a very simple way of doing it. Because for an event, you're up, you're in, it's showtime, right? And
exactly,
to me, you approach that in everything you do. It's incredible how enjoyable it really is, and how your sensory buttons work, because you'll be more attentive.
Yes, yeah. That well, though no, that now those are some powerful, wonderful words of advice, and I love that. Well, clearly, it's worked for you.
Yeah, well,
you've had a beautiful career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or you have. I had, as if it's all past tense.
Yeah,
that's
like
not what's going on.
I like to keep going.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I said, the old story, everybody wants to go to heaven, but not right now.
Yeah. That's exactly. Well, it's, I have so many things running through my mind right now, but it was just, I was thinking about, you know, I'm just, I have this practice that I'm doing, like opening this practice of doing sound healing and creative art play and things like that. And then I started to think, I'm turning 65 this year. Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Starting this like whole new thing. And then I thought, you know, you never even doubted it until you thought about the age thing. Why did you do that for? Like, you're just doing this thing because it's what I do. It's because now I can. Okay, I couldn't before. And I can only do it for a little time, but I can do it. And it's just keeps us alive, and it keeps us happy and engaged. And it's, wow, what a life you
engaged
lead.
Is key.
Yeah, it really is.
Keeping engaged and on top of things. And I think the other thing that comes out, there's so much more introspection, you know, as we get older, but the a lot of true enjoyment comes from giving other people enjoyment.
Yes,
you know, it's so true.
Isn't that the truth? Wow. Well, Tom, thank you. Thank you so much. What a gift. This is a gift for me, a gift for the listeners. I really appreciate that you've taken the time to come and just share a little bit about the really incredible, interesting life that you are leading and the places that you've been and the things that you've seen and created. It's a lot. And I hope that it'll be an inspiration for those, you know, of all ages to go out there and find the thing that inspires you and do that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do what you love, love what you do, and give more than you promise.
Oh, well, that's a good place to end. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. And this is Allie, and thank you all for tuning in. I really appreciate that. I know life gets busy, and I appreciate that you would spend some time with us here today. Do remember to find your joy. Thanks so much for joining me today. If you found a piece of your joy in this episode, I would love to hear about what came up for you so that we can continue to grow the impact of this show. Thanks again. See you soon. And remember, find your joy.